the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We're back at you after a month off. Last time we chatted, we were about to get set for the winter meetings, and now we are into January. The Brewers have made a couple moves since we last chatted. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, joined on the other line by Tom Hodricourt. We're recording this on a beautiful Monday in Milwaukee, Tom. It's gorgeous outside.
Yeah, I think we'd be rained out even with the roof today. That's how hard it's raining.
That's completely true. It is gloomy. It is gross. But I guess all in all, the weather hasn't been so bad. Many Brewers fans anxiously waiting to get back into those summer months. When we get to March and April, we'll be getting closer to this season. And we want to talk about some of the moves that the Brewers have actually made. But actually, as we record this, there's kind of a report out there, John Morosi and others, saying that the Brewers and Giants have had some substantive talks about Madison Bumgarner, the left-handed stud pitcher who had some pretty impressive moments in postseasons past. He's got 1 year left on his deal, so he'd be a little bit of a rental, but the discussion that maybe these two teams would be a match, would be trade partners. Curious what you think of that, because that's obviously something that's going to get Brewers fans' eyebrows raised, but it doesn't seem like a fit. What do you think of that? Do you think that's something that the Brewers could pursue, or does that sound fishy to you?
Well, the thing that you have to be careful with the Brewers and any trade rumors is they check in on everybody and everything. That's one thing I've learned about David Stearns and company is they just are the masters of due diligence. They look at everything. And that's why they get attached to so many rumors and so many baseless rumors. Remember last winter, they were definitely going to sign either Jake Arrieta or Yu Darvish. Well, they never really got down to brass tacks with either one. So I don't know how recently the Giants have talked to the Brewers about Bumgarner. And I don't know how substantive they were, those talks. I'm not convinced that they would want to give up a lot for Bumgarner. Like you mentioned, he's a one year rental. They are in a situation where and Craig Counsell talked about this at the winter meetings in early December. They are in a situation where there's only so many ways they can improve their team. In other words, they have such a deep, talented roster that just doing little minor moves doesn't improve it. It would have to be something big, something maybe like a Madison Bumgarner, but that doesn't mean they're going to do it. One thing I've learned about the Brewers and pitching rumors is they seem to value their own pitching way more than the outside world does. And that's why you keep hearing them attached to certain trades and signing rumors with pitchers. But I think they really like their own pitching. So, and I don't know how much they'd be willing to give up for somebody like Bumgarner. He's also had two straight injury seasons now. I know one I believe was a road bike incident, and the other I think he got hit by a line drive in the hand. So, that they were specific to certain accidents and not like ongoing shoulder or elbow woes. So, but still, the one thing that I would say about Bumgarner and as opposed to being interested in trading for somebody like him with 2 months to go in the season for the pennant push, if they're in one, if you do trade for him before the season starts, you are allowed to make a qualifying offer to free agents that would at least keep a draft pick compensation in place and help you replace anybody that you might trade for him. So in in-season trades, you are not allowed to make qualifying offers and you just lose. Kind of like with Mike Moustakas, you either sign him or you don't, but you're not allowed to do a qualifying offer. So that would be there'd be two benefits to doing a Bumgarner trade now. One, you have him for the whole season instead of the final 2 months, and the other, you can make a qualifying offer and keep draft compensation in check. But it's kind of one of those things where I'll believe it when I see it because I've heard rumors like this before and they've never panned out.
It's sort of the there's sort of a central question too with Bumgarner is the idea of the Brewers acquiring a starting pitcher at all who's, you know, a high caliber guy. That maybe that idea runs contrary to what we saw at the end of last season when the Brewers were sort of relying more heavily on their bullpen, which they have upgraded already this offseason, or at least added a lot of pieces to. And the question is, will the Brewers sort of eschew that model and go back to something more traditional during the season? Which really they kind of, it wasn't like 2018 was that unusual the way they used their starters for most of the season. But what we did see last offseason is that there were four frontline starting pitchers, presumably Arrieta, Darvish, Lance Lynn. I'm drawing a blank on number four, but there were guys that were out there, and the Brewers did not go after any of them, electing to kind of do an under the radar thing with Yuli Chacin, and obviously that paid off. So To me, I use that evidence to say the Brewers just aren't going to go crazy and try to sign a starting pitcher or make a big trade for a starting pitcher because they probably don't value them as much as other teams.
Well, what the Brewers did with their pitching down the stretch last year was specific to what was going on their staff and what a great bullpen they had and the schedule that had a bunch of off days in September and allow them to do stuff like that. But, you know, Chase Anderson was backing up on them. Zach Davies was hurt. Different things were going on with their rotation. You know, Suter had Tommy John surgery. They just got caught in a situation where Chacin was the only guy left really from the original rotation who was throwing the ball good. So they did some opening type things, some bullpenning type things. But you can only do that over the short term. You can't do that over a full six-month season unless you plan on blowing through about three different sets of relievers. So, you know, I wouldn't say that they're not open to trading for starting pitching just because of the way they ran their staff at the end of last year. I think if they had some guys that were covering innings, they wouldn't have had to do their bullpen usage as much as they did. So, I'm not going to dismiss any interest they might have in starting pitching because of that, but I do try to look at individual cases. And, you know, I don't know what the Giants would be asking for a guy like Madison Bumgarner, but how much do you want to, you know, to trade and prospect wise for a guy that you're only going to have 1 year? Yeah, it's just, you know, it's to me, that's something that it has to. You always know if a trade feels right from what you're asked to give up, you know. So it's the other end of the phone that tells you whether it's a good trade or not. And so I don't know what the Giants are asking for, or even if the Giants are that anxious to trade Bumgarner. You know, I'd be interesting to if you put a lie detector machine to their front office, just how interested they are in even trading him. So we'll see. You know, but I have learned to take a lot of the big name pitching rumors involving the Brewers with a grain of salt.
I do as well, especially because when they make these big deals, there's like no buzz about it. It just happens. Kane and Yelich kind of came out of nowhere. So, you know, these aren't coming from the Brewers side. They like to keep things close to the vest and have successfully done so. So somebody else is floating this idea first, and you just wonder how true it is. Alex Cobb, by the way, was the fourth pitcher that I was struggling to come up with. You know, one of the big moments from last season was Jonathan Scope's grand slam off Madison Bumgarner. And of course, the team non-tendered Jonathan Scope, one of their middle infield options, and middle infield or possibly third base is still kind of an area that I guess you could see the Brewers potentially upgrading in. You said the name Mike Moustakas. He is not signed yet and spending a lot of time with Brewers Ryan Braun and Christian Yelich this offseason raising some funds for some the tragedies out in California, the wildfires and the shooting out there. I don't know how unlikely it is at this point that he would be back or that the Brewers would investigate any third base options, second base options. What is your sense on that? Do you think the Brewers are still really looking at that spot or would they be comfortable with what they have now?
Yeah, well, I can't vouch for any bending of the ear that agent Scott Boras is doing with owner Mark Attanasio on Moustakas. but I haven't got any indication from the Brewers front office that they're going to, you know, re-sign him and bring him back. I do think that they're content to move Travis Shaw back to third. He's a pretty good third baseman. And we all know, a big source of power for their team. You know, they have two really good middle infielders coming in their pipeline, Keston Hiura and Mauricio Dubon. So I don't think, and Hiura is definitely second base only. Dubon could also play shortstop. So I think they're more apt to just find a short-term solution at second base and move Shaw back to third. But if Moustakas just falls in their lap at a ridiculously low price, kind of like he did when he re-signed with Kansas City last year, maybe they would consider it. But I just don't have anything right now that makes me think that's a move they're going to make.
The Brewers have made some deals to address their bullpen, which of course was one of the strengths last season. They acquired Alex Claudio in the twilight of the winter meetings. It was kind of similar to that last time we chatted. You'd mentioned the Carlos Lee trade that the Brewers made a decade ago and how that seemed to happen in the final minutes. This maybe not as high profile by any means, but they do acquire Alex Claudio as the winter meetings are wrapping up. And then over the weekend, the Brewers make a trade with the Mets. They send Keon Broxton out to New York for three guys, which I thought was a pretty good return on paper, including reliever Bobby Wall, who's probably the closest to contributing at this point. And prior to that, of course, the Brewers also made a trade with Seattle, sending Domingo Santana out in exchange for Ben Gamel. We could talk about that deal in a little bit, but just the way that the Brewers kind of approach the bullpen seems to make a lot of sense. They get these guys, sort of high ceiling guys, and see who ends up in the mix when spring training rolls around. But I was pretty impressed. It feels like both of those deals, the Claudio deal and the deal with the Mets, are pretty good returns on paper. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but it sure seemed to me that that the Brewers made pretty good out of those situations.
Yeah, once the Brewers let some of their left-handed relievers go at the end of last year, Jennings and Cedeno, you knew they had to probably pick up one or two elsewhere. And so it was not shocking when they acquired Alex Claudio from Texas right at the end of the winter meetings. That puts another lefty back in the bullpen at kind of minimum price. And I think pretty sure he has a minor league option left as well. And then, we knew they had two reserve outfielders that were out on minor league options, and Domingo Santana and Keon Broxton. So you were certain they would trade at least one and maybe both. And as it turned out, they traded both. They got two young players in for Broxton, first year pros that we'll see, an infielder and a pitcher. We'll see how they do down the road. But of what could be immediate help would be the reliever Bobby Wall. Hard throwing guy. The more I looked at him, the more he kind of profiled as maybe an upcoming Corey Knebel. He's a high 90s fastball and a curveball guy, power curveball, and that's exactly the way Knebel operates. He throws high octane gas and then mixes in a curveball. And so he had prolific strikeout numbers in AAA, ready to pitch in the big leagues. He gave up some runs in a short amount of time with the Mets last year, but I don't judge anybody off of a few games like that. So he's going to be, he has minor league options left too. So it's not like he has to make the team, but if he pitches great in spring training, he will make the team, I'm sure. And, one of the things that made the Brewers bullpen so special last year is they can strike you out. Hader is a prolific strikeout guy. Knebel, a prolific strikeout guy. Jeffress, a very good strikeout guy. So one sure way to shut down rallies is don't let them hit the ball. And the Brewers are very good at not letting teams hit the ball out of their bullpen. So if Wall can come in and add another guy that's going to have high strikeout numbers, just makes their bullpen deeper and better.
If we were having this conversation a year ago, we'd be projecting a Brewers outfield, something of the effect of involving Domingo Santana, Brett Phillips, and Keon Broxton. And now all of those guys are gone. And obviously, January 25th rolled around last year, and the Brewers picked up Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. And I was pretty bullish on Domingo Santana at this time last year, and kind of surprised that they would jump in and sign Cain to a multi-year deal, because Santana was 25. He was coming off a season that I thought was pretty impressive, and it looked like, honestly, I thought if he was able to stay healthy, he could be a budding star. Maybe not a perennial all-star, but a guy who could really, really contribute and be a regular. And then he had this past year that was just perplexing. His power disappeared, and he fell out of favor for obvious reasons. I still feel like, I mean, he's only 26. There's a chance Domingo Santana could blossom somewhere. But again, the Brewers get Ben Gamel, a guy who's familiar by last name, given that his older brother Matt Gamel was part of the Brewers organization a few years back, and another minor league pitcher, Noah Zavalos. And honestly, that sounds like a pretty good return for Domingo Santana. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I don't blame Seattle for wanting to take a chance on Domingo. As you said, he had a prolific home run year a couple of years ago, so, and he is still young. Seattle's a little tougher place to hit home runs than Milwaukee, but we'll see how he does. But, I don't know what happened to Domingo last year, because he did get to play a lot early despite all the outfielders they had, and he didn't do anything. Yeah. And then so he gets sent down. He didn't really do anything as far as power in the minors either, despite playing in Colorado Springs, which is very – has been very conducive to power hitting. So I'm not sure what happened to him. When he came back up, he was a very valuable, bat off the bench. But how much are you going to pay a guy to be a bat off the bench, And so it doesn't surprise me that Broxton and Santana were both traded. Broxton is a tremendous defensive outfielder. As I was explaining to some people on social media today who were upset that he was traded and thought that the Brewers should not have given him up, if he would have done the job offensively in center field 2 years ago, they would have never signed Lorenzo Cain. They would have just kept Keon Broxton, right? Because he's a superior defensive outfielder as well and a lot younger. But he didn't, he was not a consistent offensive player. And so that's why they picked up Cain. On last January 25th, when the Brewers picked up on the same day Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich, the days were numbered from that very day for both Domingo Santana and Keon Broxton, in my opinion. And you trade from depth. Look at the outfielders the Brewers have traded since that day, January 25th. They traded two outfield prospects that day for Yelich, Lewis Brinson, and who am I forgetting?
Monte Harrison.
Right. So, but of course, you can do that when you get somebody like Yelich coming back the other way. And since then, they traded Brett Phillips in the Moustakas trade. And then now they've traded Santana and Broxton. So how many teams could afford to trade away outfielders like that? Well, you can when you've acquired Cain and Yelich, And they acquired them with 5 years of control, too. So they still have 4 years left on both of those guys. Braun still has 2 years left on his contract. So... And they feel very happy with the outfield depth they have at AAA. Right now, it looks like the starting outfield in AAA is going to be Corey Ray, Troy Stokes Jr., and Tyrone Taylor, all of whom are on their 40. Well, Corey Ray does not have to be on their 40-man roster yet, but he is a first-round draft pick from a few years ago. They like those guys, So they still like their outfield depth, and I don't blame them.
And you can't even count those guys out, nor can you overstate the flexibility that comes with some of these moves. I mean, Ben Gamel has an option. You mentioned Claudio has an option remaining. A lot of these guys, Bobby Wall will probably start at AAA. I mean, a lot of these guys have options to go back down to the minor leagues, which is something Santana and Broxton didn't have. So this kind of seems to be the MO there, looking for guys that they can move up and down if they have to, which they did liberally in 2018.
Yeah, roster flexibility and depth means a lot to them. Look at the way they operated their roster last year. As you just noted, a lot of guys went up and down. They really operate with a true 40-man roster, and not just the 25 that can be in the big leagues at any one time. They almost fully use their 40-man roster throughout the course of a season, and it really worked out well for them last year. It's no coincidence to me that they made their big push in September after they could expand beyond, I think they had like 36, 37 players when you could expand rosters. And a lot of those guys, did well for them. Guys like Woodruff, Santana, Broxton off the bench. So they used their depth a lot in September when they made their big push to win the division. And so, They like using their full roster, and they intend on using their full roster. If Bobby Wall's not on their roster when they open the season against St. Louis at the end of March, who's to say he won't be a week later? That's kind of the way it goes with them.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. You mentioned Woodruff. That guy came up and down so much last season. He's got an option left, and I'm so curious how he's going to be used, because you could see him be – a key part of the rotation, whether or not he's, you know, a triple A part of the year. It's just really hard to know how they would wind up using a guy like that. The Brewers were named Organization of the Year by Baseball America. That actually happened prior to our last podcast, and this kind of all ties into that. So their minor league system is unquestionably depleted compared to where it was a few years ago when they had built kind of a top 10 farm system. But at the same time, you look at the machinations, the stuff we're talking about using the 40-man, the trades that they made, that David Stearns made, acquiring Lorenzo Cain, acquiring Christian Yelich. And that's that seems fair that they could be acknowledged for the success that they had in 2018, for the way that David Stearns and others were able to make that organization work as well as it did. How do they look at the minor league system, do you think? Do they look at it as something that needs to be replenished and that some of these moves are maybe tailored toward addressing that? Or do you think they really just see the minor league system as a tool to use in some of these big league trades, that they're not going to sort of restock the farm? They're going to focus on how they can use those pieces on the farm and then turn them into major league talent. Like, how do you think they look at that piece of the puzzle?
Well, one of the reasons that they had a minor league system to deal from and use, you know, prospects can be used two ways. They can either be used by you to bring up to the major leagues, or they can be used as currency to buy other players. If you go back and look at almost every trade David Stearns has made, he's always got back more players that he traded. And look at the two trades he's made this year. For Santana, he got back two players, and for Broxton, he got back three players. He always seems to get like the one additional minor leaguer tossed into a trade. And then he puts that in his system, and it provides depth for him, you know. And I'll never forget in his very first winter meetings, you know, he traded Adam Lind, a first baseman who had only one more year before free agency and it was going to be aced out on their team. He traded him for three 18-year-old pitchers from Seattle. And you said to yourself, boy, I wonder when we'll ever know if this was a good trade or not. Well, one of those pitchers was Freddie Peralta, and he showed up last year at age 21 and was pretty stinking good. And if he was the only one of the three that makes it, then it was still a great trade for a player that you're going to lose in a year anyway. So there's an example of something you have to sit on. Like I've had people ask me, well, did they get enough for Broxton? Well, if it was just one for one for Bobby Wall, it might have been worth it. But let's see what those other two minor leaguers do. You know, that pitcher and that infielder, they're first year pros. One's 21, one's 18. Let's see what they do. If Mauricio Dubon had not blown out an ACL in 1 month into the season at AAA last year, he would have played a lot for the Brewers. Look at what happened at second base before they finally traded for Moustakas and moved Shaw over there. They ran through a bunch of guys trying to play second base. Well, Dubon would have been, you know, an immediate cure, in my opinion. Well, he came in the Travis Shaw trade. And I think we could safely say if all they got for Tyler Thornburg, who is, I'm not sure if he still has even thrown a pitch for the Red Sox. If he has, it hasn't been many. If it had just been Shaw, people would have been thrilled. But Dubon's another guy that's going to come out of that trade and be, you know, he's at least going to be a super utility middle infielder, but he's also going to provide backup for Arcia at short and maybe play some second base until Hira is ready too. So the fact that David Stearns almost always gets more bodies back than he sends away has really worked to their benefit.
I think the Tyler Thornburg trade, that gift that keeps on giving, and between that, the Yelich trade, I mean, the guy could miss on every trade for a year, and I think the Brewers would still be an okay spot the way that they've built up their system under David Stearns. So Tom, that's pretty much it for right now. And as we again, it's a rainy day, but the Brewers announced today that their on deck experience, which happens every year later in January, is nearing sellout. They're a little worried that they're gonna not have enough tickets for the first time. I mean, I know the Brewers fandom is gonna hit a pretty good fever pitch based on how they did last year, but I don't know anything else that's percolating upward. This Brewers team is going to be one that that a lot of people are interested in.
Yeah, it really shows how much interest there is already, right? That the fans are already buying up all the on deck tickets, and so even if some people get turned away because there's no tickets left at the end, you know, they can only squeeze so many people into that convention hall. It's got to be a good sign. I got to believe that probably ticket sales are going pretty good too. You know, this is a great baseball town when you give them something worth seeing. You know what? And last year when that team took off in September, the place was rocking that last month, and the atmosphere in their playoff games was tremendous. When Kristen Yelich hit a home run in the first inning of Game 7. After they had tied that series against the Dodgers, it was about as loud in Miller Park as you've ever heard it. And obviously, the rest of that game didn't work out, and their season ended later that night. But and then Game 6, just the booing level of Manny Machado was very impressive, beyond the cheering level for the Brewers. So this is a team that's definitely going to support. Excuse me, this is a town that's definitely going to support their team, especially if the team gives them something to cheer about. And there's a there the Brewers are the envy of a lot of much bigger markets who would love to draw, you know, the average attendance that the Brewers draw. They're every year they're in the top third, and they're definitely not in the top third in market size. And so you know, for them to draw 2.5 to 3 million every year in their market size, they have the smallest per capita market size in the major leagues. That's incredible. So I'm guessing we're going to see another big year of attendance out at Miller Park. I'm sure their ticket sales this winter are going to go well. And, you know, we're really not that far away. Spring training is going to start in about 6 weeks. So, excuse me, in about 5 weeks.
Oh,
And,
jeez.
yeah, so it's we're getting closer and closer. And I'm sure there's some more moves to be made. You know, the Brewers are really good. Let's not forget that Wade Miley wasn't signed last year until after camp started.
Yeah. Well, Dan Jennings has acquired a game into the season, or, you know, there's a
Exactly.
lot of late moves to be made.
Yeah, I mean, G-Man Choi won the opener in San Diego, and then Jennings showed up, and Choi got sent down. You know, so they're always and it looks like there's dozens of free agents still out there. This might be another year where guys are showing up well into camp. You know, you don't have to have your team until what, March 28th or whatever opening day is. That's when you have to have your team. You don't have to have it today. You don't have to have it the first day of spring training. You have to have it the first day of the season.
Yeah, so I guess I would leave you with, I think I know the answer, but just before I let you go, would it shock you if the Brewers don't have one more major move up their sleeve in the next, you know, next 2 months?
It would shock me if they did not have one more significant move, yes.
Excellent. That's good to know. Brewers fans are going to love to hear that. He's Tom Haudricourt. Find all of his material at jsonline.com. He's writing about the Brewers all throughout the offseason and, of course, during the season. I know everybody will be following along. Thanks, Tom. We're going to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, JR.